Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and other spiritually transformative experiences, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs. You're welcome to call in to ask questions and make comments during the show. Ring toll-free at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or 888-810-8322 in Canada. Otherwise, you can ring direct at 530-876-3222. There are a number of services available through our organization, Toward the Light, providing near-death studies and support, Reiki and remote healing, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, near-death experience books and videos, and other products for body, mind, and spirit. I'd also like to encourage you to help support this program and BBS Radio by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For more information, please visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have back a special guest and friend who is the producer of the film Life After Life, based on Dr. Raymond Moody's book of the same title. Please welcome Peter Schalke. How are you, Peter?
Thank you, Juliet. I'm doing so well. It's very, very good to be with you again.
Well, it's so wonderful to have you too. And unfortunately, the little gremlins devoured your show that we did last time, so we don't have an archive of it. Hopefully that won't happen again this time. So I might repeat a few questions. And I know that you've got some new projects in the works. If you don't mind, why don't we start off by, you know, sharing a little bit of history, because I know that you had a powerful spiritually transformative experience, if my memory serves me correctly, that led to your writing, your giving talks, and even the special kind of film production that you've done. So tell us a little bit, Peter, about your STE that you had.
Well, my transformative experience is I share that term. I really like that because, you know, we can characterize our experiences in any way and quickly get pigeonholed. But this was absolutely a transformative experience for me, and it was not a near-death experience, and it wasn't. It wasn't an out-of-body experience, but it was something I think probably is much more commonplace, happens to far more people. When I was a young man at about 14 years old, I had been really quite a ordinary kid. I'd not been particularly spiritual or even inquisitive. I'd gone through, my share of some normal hardships as a teen growing up and being transplanted from West Coast to East Coast and dealing with just usual hardships. Nothing terribly traumatic. I found myself at 14 faced very unexpectedly with an encounter that I just wouldn't have predicted and hadn't looked for. I had been invited by a friend whom I had started to make movies with, history projects for history class. He had invited me on a vacation with his church, and he called it a vacation. It was code word for a retreat. It was a spiritual retreat with a church. And I went really only thinking of the beach and thinking about the young ladies who are going to be there and that I wanted to get to know. And
how old were you?
I was 14.
14,
just,
okay.
You know, just beginning to wake up to the world around me.
How's a young lad that?
Yeah. And what had happened was early. This was the year of the great superstar Jesus Christ Superstar rock opera. You may remember.
Definitely,
Roy.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Big splash. It was around 1969, and I had been listening to the music and really not particularly. Linking it to anything religious, and this retreat started to introduce me to the actual teachings of Christ, and I hadn't understood what it was before, but we got right into the gospel of love, you know, that he was teaching love and compassion to his generation, and we. Studied that for several days, and I found it interesting. I started to really look up to him as sort of an icon and as a role model, let's say. And then around one of the last days of the retreat, which had lasted a week, we were introduced to the idea that this character was not just a teacher, but a living spirit. And one who could be contacted and communed with. And, you know, that was pretty exciting a thought to a 14-year-old. I mean, especially who had no indoctrination before, I thought, oh, well, this is all quite new. I hadn't really thought of this character that way. And so that evening, in an atmosphere that I would almost have to compare to something more like a seance than a typical altar call, I just with my friends, there were four of us, two girls and my friend, my buddy and I, Tim and I, we just sat around a table and said, okay, well, let's just try this and see if there's any reality to this, or if this is just, you know, a line that we're being fed.
So were you inside? Were you in a room, sitting at a table?
Yeah, we were out on a porch, actually, a screened porch. So
okay.
It was very nice, warm, balmy summer night. You know, picture the mosquito light, you know, got just a soft yellow glow off to the side, and we were. We had been talking a lot about the compassion and the love and these ideas that suddenly were really opening, I would say opening our heart, but lowering our defenses first, so that we were really sharing some intimate secrets and fears and concerns that we had as adolescents. So we took a shot. I took a shot at what I would just have to say my first and most naive prayer I ever uttered. And I said, "Well, Jesus, if you are who I'm told you are, and if you're really out there, and if you are still able to be contacted, would you just send a sign or let me know somehow? Let us know." And I'll tell you, it was just like that, just as fast as that, that I experienced in my heart, around the area of my solar plexus, which some identify as that heart chakra, and it's right in that spot. I can point to it. Something like a very bright, warm light started to. As the only words I can use, of course, I wasn't seeing anything, but I could feel this intense radiation starting right there and growing, and it started to make me tremble and cry, and I could feel what I can only describe as the most loving, compassionate, presence dwelling in me, entering me, and it wouldn't stop, and it just grew and it grew, and I was just tears streaming down my eyes, and at a certain point I opened my eyes and all my friends were experiencing exactly the same thing.
Wow.
And we were trying to describe, you know, what was happening, and we were all realizing, yes, this is something that's happened, just happened. What are we going to do about this? And we just discovered the key to the universe here. What do we do here? This guy is here. He's this guy that we've been talking about. This Christ Jesus is alive. And what does this mean? And so we just started reciting to each other what we started to understand and what we started to realize about humanity and how humanity is just so messed up because they're so cut off from the spirit that they must have been originally created to have, and that suddenly here we were having this indwelling, which was, we found out later, I mean, I didn't even know this terminology at the time, but later found out to be what was called the rebirth of the spirit. You know, that which had been dead was able to be reborn, and that was what we were experiencing.
And did you feel that complete oneness? Did you have a sense of total oneness with all life when you were going through that?
Absolutely. It was the way that life in eternity is supposed to be. And suddenly experienced that, that's the way it is. That's the way it can be. And jumping, you know, now ahead 35, 36 years, because I'm 51 now, I can say, now I understand that, yes, indeed, that's the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't always feel that way, because this world does have a tremendous heavy gravity to it, and there's still all of those unsolvable problems connected to
seemingly unsolvable, let's put it that way.
Seemingly unsolvable.
One thing I want to interject a little bit here, because there have been so many people who've been, even the past few days, expressing to me, well, I don't want to have to go through I don't want to have to be dead or nearly dead or go through a near-death experience in order to have such an experience.
Right.
And
I have
iterated to them numerous times, you don't have to be on the verge of death to have such a transformative experience.
Absolutely.
People go through these spiritually transformative experiences all the time.
Yeah.
You are a wonderful example of that, and how all of you, now how many people were in your group? Were there four of you?
There were four of us, yeah.
Wow. And all of you had this?
It was all
simultaneously.
Simultaneously, yep.
Whew.
Now, what happened after that was, I think, just as significant, because it sort of pointed out the big blockage that those who have this kind of experience that I had almost invariably experience, too. The four of us, after another, you know, hour of just kind of basking in this glow, we said, oh, we've got to go. We have to go and tell our friends who were, you know, they were playing football down at the beach. And we said, we've got to go and tell them this and share it with them, you know. We felt like, well, you know, we've got this little flame going on. Now we'll just pass it on and start a big bonfire. And maybe the whole world will be lightened up by, you know, next week.
Oh, yes, I know that feeling so well.
Yeah, so... The hard reality is about to slap us, because we went down there and we sat, everybody to grab their football, buried it in the sand, said, listen, you gotta hear this, sense this, get this picture. And we started to explain it, and it didn't take but maybe 10 minutes before we realized, this can't be just told. We can't describe, there's no words for this.
No.
And we had gone through a process and a willful choice. That was what I ultimately have decided was the big difference, because we were trying to kind of force it on them, and we just wanted to make them go there where we were.
Yeah.
And it was suddenly, it was a real kind of a a slap to us to realize, a wake-up call to say, this is not going to be easy. We did realize, and I have for the rest of my life realized, that is the most important thing for me to share and to pass along. But it is not easy.
And, oh, isn't that true?
And it just takes all the rest of your resources and all of God's, you know, coordinating of things to be able to find opportunities like this one here tonight, to be able to share it to open ears to those who want to hear. So, the footnote to that, I have to say, many, many years after that night, I encountered one of the little girls who had been there at that on the beach there. She was about 7 years old at the time, and she was one of those whom I thought had just not understood what we were talking about. And 20 years later, I encountered her, full-grown woman with children of her own, and I recounted that night, and she said, "Oh, you know what? I remember it all, but except you had one detail wrong. What you shared with me, with us as a group that night, I got it. I got it, and for days afterward, I was in that space too."
Wow.
And I thought, how beautiful, you know, how wonderful. I had all this time thought that it had gone for nothing, but it was worth it.
That's the whole thing. We plant these seeds, and we never know which ones are going to end up sprouting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And it's so important to realize that nothing is wasted, really. You know, that even if it appears that no one hears us and no one understands what we are sharing, somehow, even through osmosis, as it were, these people are going to start to get it. Something will quicken inside of them. It could be happening right now, you know?
Yeah.
And this is so tremendously special. And I'm you know, I've really been so excited to talk to you again, because you are such a person, and almost effortlessly, it seems, that all of you were enveloped in this light and love and had this, like a group STE. This is really, really special. So, again, I want to remind everybody that you don't have to be on the verge of death to have such communion as this. It's you know, I actually think when we read, you know, the Judeo-Christian Bible and other sacred books and scriptures, they're just chock full of testimonies of people who had these experiences regularly and who were in communion with the light source, with God, whatever you choose to call it. And, you know, now they want to send the men in the white coats with their drugs and straitjackets, but the truth is that this is very natural and very real and not something to be shunned. I've been speaking with a lot of people who are really striving to have these experiences so that they can know for themselves that it really exists, that this love is real, that the Creator is real, you know? And I'm very excited about this. So what is the name of the book?
That we ultimately wrote is Reflections of Heaven.
Reflections of Heaven. I knew it was something heaven. Okay,
yes.
Reflections of Heaven. You've got that story in there, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. That is in there. And this is this book came about as a result of a number of documentaries that we had done over the previous 10 years. And I'll tell you what, this would be making a good segue, I think, so that you so you see where it all started, which you had just heard, and you and I explained how I found it very difficult to describe this in words. Well, what I did discover very quickly was that this newfound hobby of filmmaking, and I remember 14 years old, in 1969, was just a little home movie camera. It was
what,
very,
8mm or something?
Yeah, very rudimentary 8mm. And I was making movies and realizing that these spiritual experiences can be described profoundly in film. Now, even though the film may have been very, you know, naive and basic, one of my very first awards that I ever won as a teenage filmmaker was about a near-death experience. And
oh.
Here, this was very, very interesting, and this is sort of what led me into doing the NDE documentaries. By the time I got to college, I realized I was starting to read psychology books for school, one of which was this new bestseller called Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody. And when I read it and I read about these experiences where people would go into the light on the verge of death and encountering a bright light that was full of compassion and knew everything about them and that they never wanted to leave, I realized, well, this is the same light that I encountered. This is
there
the
you
same,
go.
Same
yes.
being. You know? and so at that point, I began, as college senior projects, I began to do some more sophisticated explorations of special effects to depict that light. And it ultimately led me into a career of doing special effect films. And I was doing, for the next 12, 13 years, I was doing the light effects that were of the vintage of Star Wars, if you remember the movie.
Yes.
Star Wars. And if you remember 2001, A Space Odyssey, where they had this tremendous tunnel at the end of the movie where the people were hurtling down it. Well, I found that. I discovered how to do that kind of an effect in order to depict the near-death experience. And it really led me into a whole career of depicting light and what I used to refer to as painting with light onto.
Very good. Beautiful. Now, are you at liberty to say whose NDE you were first filming?
You mean in college or during the film with Raymond?
In college, your first film work an NDE.
It was, Juliet, it was pretty fictitious. I kind of synthesized a made-up character. And,
okay.
And, you know, it was a dramatic film, and so I had a young man who's having a heroin overdose and dying and floating out of body and into the light. And having a flashback, you know, he was flashing back to his earlier years and seeing the whole life in review. So jumping ahead now another 12, 13 years, I had really mastered that craft, and I had at one very wonderful evening, I had an opportunity to meet Dr. Moody, who had, you know, influenced me so many years before with his book. And when we met, we agreed that yes, his film, his book would be so worthy of making a film, and we just prayed for resources to come about, and it didn't take too long that we were able to find a budget and a distributor and actually produce that work, which he considered the definitive film on his research.
What year was that, Peter?
That was in 1991, and that had already been, 14, 15 years after his book had been released.
Yes, yeah. Funnily enough, I didn't even know the book existed, which is interesting. I've said it numerous times that I never even heard the term near-death experience, I think, until the
the mid-90s, and then I found out about the International Association for Near-Death Studies in 1997 and became a member straight away. But it's interesting how there were so many powerful NDEs, including one of my NDEs in the mid-70s, and that's when Raymond Moody actually wrote the book or published the book, right?
Yes, that's 1976.
Right. 1976.
Yes, I think there was quite a lot of activity going on at that time.
There sure was, including me, but yet
I didn't
know.
And yours was happening at what time, at what year?
As we speak, I lapsed into a coma on Boxing Day, which is 26 December 1975.
Yeah.
Was in a coma for 5 weeks. Lost my vital signs on my birthday, which is coming right up on 2nd February. Then, started to have a little trickle of life in the body, but still in comatose. And then I actually came out of coma, I think it was like 6 or 7 February, so between 26 December and 6 or 7 February, I was, quote, in comatose and dead. So it was February of 1976. I was, I guess sort of like Jesus. I died when I was 33 and resurrected on my 34th birthday.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
I thought so, and I thought that straight away. I thought, okay, whew, now I've been sent back here to do some serious work, because I did not want to come back. Of course I didn't want to come back.
Now, Juliet, you'll have to forgive me because, I'm a consummate interviewer for my films, so I'm going to switch roles with you for just a second.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, because when you experienced that, prior to any public conversations, and the books had not yet been released, and there was not a lot of common knowledge about this, did you find it difficult to share? How did that work for you?
Absolutely. First of all, I made the mistake. There were, I want to say, at least a half a dozen doctors on the case, one of which I loved dearly. She was a woman, and she was so nurturing and maternal and wonderful, and then, a bunch of men. And I remember one doctor who was from India, and I made the mistake of telling him that I just had the most tremendous experience and been on the most wonderful journey. And he proceeded to tell me that I needed psychiatric evaluation. And, that shut me down a bit. And then when I finally got out of hospital, I shared that with a friend. And then I shared the experience with another friend who was Seventh-day Adventist, and she said, oh, no, you were just hallucinating. When people die, they are dead, gone, that's it. And only when, yada, yada, Jesus comes back and quickens the dead, do people rise from the dead. And I totally shut down. She had been a dear friend. After that experience, we never spoke again. I walked away, and I said, she's been just absolutely blinded and brainwashed by her religion. And again, it absolutely broke my heart. So I shut down. I would not talk about it to anyone. And that's why I'm saying, except on extremely rare occasions that I don't even remember, that's how rare it was. And then it wasn't, like I said, till the late 90s. We're looking at 20 years afterwards.
More than 20 years, yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm all over the place. Look at this, And I don't care what anybody thinks now, because I know that this is real. I knew then that it was real, but I'm so sensitive that I don't handle being ridiculed and humiliated very easily. And now it's just because of the widespread media interest, and as you know, I was on the TV news in Nashville. That took a lot of nerve for me to do that, but Spirit made me say yes to Channel 4 News. Both times they approached me, I had to say yes, and I just kept going, I wanted to say no, but Spirit wouldn't let me. It had my tongue. So,
how was the reception to that interview and that news?
I'm very curious about that. The first one where they filmed our meeting in June of 2004 was wonderful. They did a wonderful, wonderful job. When we were on Channel 4 News in November of 2005, that's right, it was 4th November, I was very disappointed in Alan Frio because he had led me to believe that they were going to talk about the support group and life after death and that sort of thing. Instead, he said nothing of the fact that I operate a support group for people who've had near-death experiences. And he made it look very spooky. And I had, you know, I'm not all that naive and ignorant about television, film, lighting, etc. Because when the cameraman was setting up the lighting, and he had those reflective shields in there, he sat me down in the chair, and the lights and the shields were beneath me, below me.
Oh.
I said, wait a second, what are you doing with this light? You're going to create these eerie shadows.
Yeah.
The light should be level to me or above me, not beneath me. And I said, I don't mean to undermine you. However, and he said, no, the above you would create worse shadows. And I thought, I know what these buggers are doing. They want to create a spook show, and that's exactly what they did. Alan Feel was wearing all black, coming out of a black background. And then you saw myself, Yvonne Perry, and Dr. Jerry Server, I think that was his surname, looking, well, no, they didn't do it to Jerry. They just did it to myself and Yvonne, made us look very spooky.
Well, that's a real shame because it's true that, and I know this firsthand because I'm a producer and director of television, and I know that the way that things are presented, the audience will perceive it as though it were fact.
I know, and that's what really upset me. Because on the other side isn't dark, it isn't eerie, it isn't spooky, it's luminous. Everywhere is luminous.
I mean, and anybody who spends time with you in person, it sees the light all over you and shining from your eyes. So it's unfortunate that television audiences were turned into a sensational experience.
Yeah, and there was no mention of Toward the Light. There was no mention of the website. There was no mention of our support group, nothing. And I just wanted to cry. And they had broadcast it in two parts. I think the first broadcast was at, when is the news, 6 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock in the evening, something like that. So it was really a shame, and I let Alan know that I wasn't pleased, and he was kindly defensive, but I just got to let this go. They got what they wanted, and they did what they wanted, and there's nothing we can do except, you know, now I can explain via the radio show and the meetings and lectures or whatever that. And you probably experienced this too. Didn't you feel a sense of light around you when you felt this love enveloping you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the light you can just feel, you can sense it. And there's this seems to be a common experience for anybody who's had a transformative experience is that it's almost impossible to put in words.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's really not of this world. It's not something that you can only compare it. You can only use metaphors or parable or compare it in some way, because it's just a totally different realm that you're trying to describe. So it was light. It was a feeling of love and compassion. And I heard one NDE experiencer put it just very well. By saying, I could have described it as love, or I could have described it as light, and it would be the same thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, irradiant, compassionate love.
And I remember seeing George, and I'm never sure how to pronounce his name, Rodonian?
The Russian.
Yes.
Rodonaya.
Rodonaya, there we go.
I would roll it off my tongue if I.
Ooh,
bless him. Earlier in the evening. Rodonaya.
And you could see the
glistening eyes and the love just emanating from him, too. And bless him, he finally got to cross over, for goodness' time.
Yes, he did, several years ago.
It was a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And, you did such a tremendous job, and let's do a little bit of shameless self-promotion. Life After Life, it's in video format, VHS. And people can purchase it through Toward the Light.
Yes.
And it's look on the show info page and you will see it right there. Do you also have it in DVD format or just video?
I am just now able to burn individual DVD copies. I don't have DVD packaging, but I have it video packaging in VHS. But the DVD is, frankly, probably a little cleaner copy just because it's a DVD.
Yes.
So if people would prefer DVD, I certainly can burn them a DVD. It won't have the fancy labeling.
Well, we can certainly have people enjoying it. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. And, of course, I, who have seen very few films, I did have the honor of seeing that one more than once. And it was such a delight to meet you and say, oh, my goodness, this is great. What a small world, you know? And so you, as I remember, what you had told me is that Raymond Moody had actually turned down other people who had approached him to do a film.
Well, that's right, yes. Yeah, he had over the years been approached by various filmmakers and documentarians and news shows. And, you know, I think he probably had a bit of the same mixed bag of experiences, similar to what you just recounted. And he knew not to totally trust the media.
Yes.
You know, to hand over his baby and all of his research and his best stories, you know, testimonials, to Hollywood, I think is the way he was perceiving it.
Yes.
And so he just waited, and he turned down apparently quite a number of offers, and something just seemed right.
Did you let him know that you had a spiritually transformative experience?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I told him about that story, and I told him, I let him know that I was sympathetic, and maybe that was what really secured his confidence that I would handle it properly. Oh, and I thought, and this was very, this really helped too. He knew that I was an animator, a special effect animator, and I showed him some of the effects that I had been doing. And he was rather enthused by the idea that this would be, this film would be handled more as a creative piece of filmmaking than simply a news, you know, piece of journalism. And of course that's the way that I ultimately handled it. But he knew that is what I had in mind to do, and I think that put him very much at ease.
Well, it was so beautifully heartfelt, especially when it opens with you writing to your father.
Right. Yes.
And then getting into this loving dialogue with Raymond as you're walking in the countryside, and then covering different aspects of the NDE. It was beautiful. You would cover a certain part of the NDE with how many NDEers? Was it four or five that you interviewed on there?
Well, he brought us five, and I just happened to know one myself, a friend, through a friend. And so we had six stories altogether.
Okay. And then you would move on to a different part of the indie, like, for example, when they started describing their understanding or interpretation or experience or not of hell. And I remember George saying that his experience of hell was fear of the unknown. And I thought, oh, that is so spot on. And these people were, absolutely wonderful. The one thing about Raymond Moody's material that I found a little disconcerting is that he, I guess there's been a stereotyping going on where now, you know, people associate NDEs with going through a tunnel, but as it turns out, the majority of us experiences don't have the tunnel experience. I've had at least three NDEs. Actually, I think more. There as a small child, I couldn't remember because I was always popping in and out of this earth plane anyway. But I never experienced the tunnel. So that sort of, you know, not that it doesn't happen, because indeed it does happen, but it tends to be more rare.
Well, you know, it's a very good point you bring up, because when Raymond Moody first began to do this research, he was approaching it as a clinical study, and he was doing it as a research project. It wasn't clinical in that he couldn't really do tests, but he was trying to outline the common threads of these experiences. And in his studies, in which he did interview several hundred for his first book, what he did do is he outlined anything that had been experienced more than just a few times. And so when you read the chronology of the experience, beginning with the awareness that one is dead, the out-of-body experience, the presence of a light coming to a presence, coming to, or perhaps a guardian angel is the term to use, to usher you into the next realm, the tunnel, the great light at the end of the tunnel, and then the life review, and so on and so on. When you read that chronology, it sounds like, well, this is the experience that everyone will have. But it's not quite so.
Yeah, exactly.
And that became clear over the years when other researchers, like yourself and PMH Atwater and so many others, Kenneth Ring, had outlined it, and we're finding variances to these various elements or stages of the experience. And it really became clear after a time that nobody is going to experience every one of these things, or very few people are going to experience every one of these. And at the tunnel, perhaps that is a smaller percentage than what we had first been led to believe.
Yeah, and that was something that PMH Atwater pointed out a lot too, because she's interviewed, blimey, over 3,000 NDEs, you know, and counting, and
yeah.
Plus the fact that she is a multiple NDE as well. And what's really been wonderful just in the past few years, I would say actually since the new millennium, that people have come out all over the place. This is an open discussion now. It's a household word, you know. We've had our coming out. We're not in the closet anymore, as it were. And it's nice to be able to talk about it, to compare notes, to even in doing so, helping us glean an even deeper understanding of our own experiences. And then a light goes off and we, oh, that's what that was, you know. And it helps me understand the various idiosyncrasies that we end up with as a result of having had these experiences. You see what I'm saying? So it's,
yeah.
It's very, very powerful, and I'm just so grateful for people like you who did such a tastefully, beautifully done documentary. And actually, the first news clip that was done on me on, I think it was 14th June. Yes, 14th June 2004 at our Friends of Iron's Nashville meeting. they did some of the same effects I noticed that you did, and it was really beautiful. And I thought, oh, thank you, people. You know, they did really a beautiful job on that one, so I've got no complaints there. And I could sense that it would really grab people's hearts, you know. And also, again, letting people know, well, it's only the body that slips away and dies, but we don't. We just keep going on, because I never had a sense of death. I never had a sense of being unconscious. What? What's that? I've been traveling all over the place, doing all kinds of things, and just with the thought being able to create something or be somewhere. So this is a very powerful testimony. And now people all over the place are saying, yes, that's what I've been through as well. So what have you been doing since, and what are you working on now, Peter?
Well, I would just have to really give a condensed summary of what's happened since. The that first film did quite well. The Life After Life film was picked up by the Learning Channel, and it won a New York Film Festival Award. And it was translated into a dozen languages, so it was seen all over the world. And I found that I had an open door at that point with the Learning Channel to do more films of similar topics, related topics. And I had an opportunity to do a two-part special on angel encounters. Many of the stories that we had heard in the near-death experiences involved guardian angels or angelic presences. And that became sort of a first step on a journey to hear about other angel encounters, things that would happen on that side of life, but also seeing how God sends these divine messengers to us on this side to bring messages if we're ready to hear them, if we're willing to hear them.
And was this a series or just...
It was like, a two-part special. They called it a series, but it was really a mini-series, two 1-hour shows. And that led subsequently to two other programs on experiences of miracles, stories of miracles. Again, a natural derivative of the previous film where we were hearing of angelic encounters many times... these angelic experiences were accompanied by miraculous events, and that once again provided seeds for another field of journalistic study. So we did two films on miracles, led to doing not only yet another series for the Hallmark Channel, which was called Miracles, Angels, and Afterlife, which is, by the way, now, if anybody is interested to see that series, that's now been picked up and is airing on, of all channels, on TBN, which, you know, used to just be kind of the French provincial evangelical network.
And maybe you could say that again. What are the cool letters?
TBN, Trinity Broadcast Network. I never really thought I'd have a show on the network, but...
That's a Christian network, is it not?
It is an absolutely straight-ahead Christian network.
Wow, yes, in Nashville, in Hendersonville.
Well, it's out of Hollywood. I mean, it's out of California. They have a branch in Nashville. But they air it on Sunday night, Sunday 10 o'clock Pacific time, which makes it later. They don't stagger it, so you have to calculate it from 10 o'clock Pacific time.
That would be one. Eastern time.
One Eastern, midnight Central, and so forth. And they show, so Miracles, Angels, and Afterlife started on Hallmark and now is on TBN. And it also led to doing a couple of books, Doubleday books. The first you had mentioned, Reflections of Heaven. And then another one, a sequel, which is just about to come out in 3 weeks. You'll find that released by Doubleday, February 21st.
Oh, that's exciting news. And what is that called?
That book is called Journey of Light.
Journey of Light. Okay, I want a copy.
Oh, you will. We'll send you one. We'll make sure Doubleday sends you one. And to anyone else, they can, I believe, already order on Amazon.
On Amazon. Great. That's great news. We're going to have to get you a website, Peter, so we can...
We're working on one presently.
Oh, that's great. And I'm also getting to where I'm building more websites also, especially sites about stuff like this that I'm so excited for people to know about it, to have access to all these resources. Because the good news is, and I just feel so deeply moved inside, and some of you may be listening that I'm talking about you now, but some wonderful people recently have sent me emails, and they had, prior to literally just a few weeks ago, had believed in nothing. And, some people even feeling suicidal, and then they found out about me. They found my NDE account on neardeath.com. So I've got to say thank you, Kevin Williams, for all the tremendous work on that website, near-death.com. It is chock full of very powerful information and resources on NDEs, and I'm on there as well. So people have been reaching out and asking questions and saying that now they're really starting to believe and also not question their sanity, no longer thinking they're crazy as a result of doing all of this reading and talking to me. So I'm just so grateful that people are finding peace of mind as a result of, getting hold of all of this information, which had been kind of hidden until more recent years when it started getting widespread media interest. So that's really exciting. And are you working on any film projects, or are you just working on the books right now?
I'm working on several film projects, and the most interesting thing now I'm finding, having now become a bit seasoned in various media, I'm being asked to do special projects, things that I would have never dreamed of doing. We just went to Africa. A friend of mine and I, a colleague, went to Africa in November to set up an HD video facility for a mission group. And very interesting. This is one of these quite enlightened missionary groups that is setting up facilities to be able to help spread their word, the gospel, to those in areas where they would have not heard it otherwise. And they're videotaping and sharing by DVD and by internet. So I'm finding myself being led into many different directions, and it's all for the same purpose as the very night of that retreat, that vacation, that great awakening, transformative experience.
Wow.
To be able to spread in whatever medium, through whatever avenue people are ready to hear about that that light, about that light of God. Now I have to ask you, if we have another minute.
We've got 1 minute, as it turns out.
Could I ask you, because this is what I always ask NDEers, when you came back, what was the most important lesson that you had learned from the other side to bring back to share with people on this side?
Well, one thing that was really significant for me was that the experience validated my communion with the light source, validated the fact that we are indeed multidimensional and we do live forever, and that we are multisensory. Because I had been, considered crazy and living in a fantasy world and all of that bollocks, and then this validated, because ever since I've been alive, my focus has been on serving God, being in communion with God, walking the sacred path. so that meant that I was a bit odd. And this huge NDE that was coming upon the 31st anniversary, I'm going to be 31 on the 2nd. I was so at peace knowing that this love is real. It's not a hallucination. That, you know, when people perceive that there is a loving presence around them, that is absolutely real. This unconditional love, the notion of eternal life, that we are divine in essence. I mean, I could go on and on and on about what this did for me and how it validated all of this. Plus the fact that when I came back to this plane, I was as a newborn babe. I was totally neutral. There were no judgments about anything. It was like a blank slate, and I was able to just take things in and just have a tremendous sense of awe and wonder. And this love and the, you know, the dialogue, I should say, with the light continued even after I was back on this plane, and it took quite some time to fade. And let me not forget to mention that there was no fear, absolutely no sense of fear at all. So that has, you know, made a tremendous impact on me, and that's why I like talking about it and thinking about it, to be reminded of what is real and not to allow myself to be brought down by the appearances of what's going on in this world, because it is really grave right now.
Well, everything that you said is the best of the best news that can be distributed, and it's the news that has to be told. The TV news will tend to go for the fear and the dark side and
yes,
whatever is sensational. But what you just described is that good news that has to be spread. And I'm so thankful. I'm just so thankful that you're doing this.
Well, it's such an honor, Pete, and I'm so pleased to have had you with us, and we'll have to do this again because there's always exciting news to share, and you're such a wonderful friend.
Yes.
So do you have an email really quickly or contact information you'd like to share before we sign off?
Yes, I can be reached at petershock@aol.com. Petershock, SHOCK@aol.com. And Juliet, perhaps the next time we talk, my wife Stowe can join us.
I would love that.
I know she would be eager to begin to tell some of the stories that readers will be able to read in Journey of Light.
Well, thank you so much, and please give her a big hug from me, both of you. And we will have to sign off for this week, this transmission of Toward the Light. It's been so wonderful having you.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll do this again. And one of my favorite sayings to remind everyone is, it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week. Have a wonderful week. Blessings to all. Cheerio for now.